We often talk on the podcast about how important it is to take action and move forward. And if you've not become an investor yet, make that first deal. But of all the deals that we see, we turn down the vast majority of them. And in this episode, we're going to teach you why.
Welcome to the Property Podcast, where every Thursday morning, property investors come to be informed and inspired. I'm Rob D with Rob B. This is episode 332, where we are saving you from deals that you shouldn't be doing. So this is one that you'll be wanting to take notes on wherever you are in your property journey. And make sure you stick around to the end, because in Hub Extra, we've got a tool that's going to keep you fit and unleash your competitive side.
So it's time for our news story now, and my mum will be happy because I'm talking about the Wirral. Yes, not many people talk about the Wirral, but we are today because Wirral Waters is a huge regeneration project. It's one of the biggest in the country. When it's complete, the money invested into this small area of the Wirral will be over £1 billion, possibly much more. So it's a project that's worth watching. And I think it's fair to say that there's been a lot of talk about this project, and even though the people behind it are a serious team of people who have a track record of delivering, there hasn't really been much happening so far. Until now, that is. And Rob, what a way to start off a regeneration project, by partnering with this developer.
Yes, the developer that you're hinting at is Urban Splash. We've had their co-founder, Tom Bloxham, on the podcast in the past. You'll find the link to that in the show notes. Go listen to that. It's an amazing episode. Urban Splash, as you'll know, if you've listened to the episode, are one of the most forward-thinking property developers around. They've got a track record of getting into areas first and completely transforming them by making brave decisions that pay off. And that is exactly what they're doing again with this development. And also, this is a development of 347 modular homes, so factory built, which is again a trend that they are at the absolute forefront of. So it is great to see this happening, because this is such an endorsement for the Wirral Waters scheme. For any regeneration project of this scale, it seems to be talked about for such a long time. I mean, Wirral Waters has been talked about for as long as I can remember, as long as I've been interested in property. And going has been slow, but it always is with projects like this. Of anything of this scale, it was the same with the King's Cross redevelopment. You can kind of lose faith at points because it seems like nothing's happening. But this story seems to be a great sign that things now are really happening.
Wowzers, time flies when you're having fun. Well, at least when you're podcasting, because it is nearly time for another meetup. Yes, next week is meetup week. The first Thursday of every month, we have meetups around the country and actually around the world. It's a place that you can network with other like-minded individuals. Nobody's going to sell to you, and it's super friendly. It's just a place where people can talk property. If that sounds appealing to you, and it probably will as you're listening to this podcast, then get yourself along. Go along to propertyhub.net/meetups and get yourself a ticket. They're only £5. It's not a money-making scheme. It's just to make sure you're going to turn up and to cover the basic costs. But what you'll find for that price is a room full of enthusiastic property lovers. So if you've not been before, come on, make it happen. And if you have been before, it's great that you're a regular. See you again soon.
When you're first getting into property, it seems like the most important thing to do is to get the deal done. To do as many deals as you can. And there's a lot that goes into that. There's the big picture, such as your research and your goal setting. There's the team you build around you. And then there's the negotiations that you need to be doing. All those things will help you get deals done. But the more time you spend in property, the more you realize that actually it's not about getting every deal done. Often the best thing you can do from your portfolio is to know when to walk away from a deal. But Rob, it's especially hard at the beginning, but however long you've been in property, walking away is not easy to do.
No, it's not. If you've put a lot of time and effort into making a deal work, then if you start to get niggles or warning signs that you should walk away, or at least reassess the deal, you can begin to get a little silly and ignore those warning signs, because you get deal bias. It's understandable, and I've seen it happen so many times before, where people have worked so hard on a deal that they start to massage the numbers, ignore important things that are going on with a contract or a lease or its potential to get the property let. Whatever it may be, people start to put the blinkers on and just get so focused on getting the deal over the line. If you're listening today and you're in the middle of putting a deal together and that sounds like you, before you move any further, make sure you take notes on this podcast. And even if you're not working on a deal right now, chances are you probably will do again in the future. So what we're going to cover today is going to be really useful. So first up, Rob, is the obvious one, which is the price. You can spend time looking for a deal, maybe it's a refurb project, whatever it may be, and you're so excited that you found something that you can start to overlook the price and kid yourself that it's at good value. But as crazy as that sounds, people actually do fall foul to this basic rule of just making sure that you've got to get the price right.
Yeah, I think there are two ways in which people get this wrong. One is to just let the price creep up. So you go in with an offer, you get it turned down, so you go back with a slightly higher offer, which is now starting to feel pretty uncomfortable anyway, but you want to make it work because you put the time in. And then the vendor comes back with a counter offer, which is a little bit higher again. Not radically, but just a little bit. But by now, just by creeping up over time, the spread between what you wanted to offer in the first place and what's now on the table is pretty different. And it can be enough to tip the balance from good to really not worth bothering with. So that's one way in which people end up paying too much. The other is to make an offer based on the information you've got, which often isn't much, but then new information comes to light that really changes the whole nature of the deal. So, for example, in a refurb project, you go, you have a look around, you make an offer, you maybe try to take 10% off the asking price or something, you get it, you're feeling great about yourself. Then during the process, the legals are going on, you come back round with your builder, you get everything priced up, and there's things that you hadn't noticed. There's a lot more that needs doing, and your refurb cost is going to be significantly higher than you thought. At this point, it's very difficult to try to go back and renegotiate. You might be embarrassed, or to cut your losses and walk away, because by this point, you've put not only time, but also money into the deal. But going ahead when the numbers are stacked against you is a really bad idea, because by this point, even the best case isn't very good. It's not the investment that you thought you were making at the start. And as we all know, whenever you're doing any kind of project like this, you'd never get the best case. Something always goes wrong. So the further you get into a deal, the more painful it's been to get to that point, the harder it is to walk away, but also the more important it is to walk away if the deal just isn't right.
I love that, Rob. You know, we're over 300 episodes in and we're still talking about new things. We're still covering new ground and covering topics that we haven't done before. And that is so important. And you know what? For those who've been in property for a while now, we've all been there. We've all done that. We've all started talking ourselves into a deal. Hopefully, for the majority of us, we've caught ourselves doing that. But there are some people who would have felt the pain. And hopefully, if you've not done that yet, you can learn from that. Another one you can learn from is understanding what an asking price is, because it is not the value of a property. So if you start negotiating with someone and you get £10,000 off the asking price, you may feel pretty good about your negotiation skills and progress with the deal. You know, look at me, I've got £10,000 off this. Fantastic. But it's not fantastic if the property was overvalued by £10,000 or even more. So remember, an asking price does not mean a value. It can be, but it's not a guarantee. So you have to do your research. Don't kid yourself. Just because it's listed on Rightmove for that number doesn't mean it's that value. Look at all the comparables in that area. Look at all the sold prices in that area. Speak to estate agents and letting agents, especially if you don't know the area, to get a feel of what the price should be. Sometimes it's really obvious if there's loads of comparables, like in a city centre. And sometimes it's a little bit more difficult and you have to put that effort in. But put that effort in, because otherwise you could be kidding yourself you're getting a great deal. And once again, you're not. So price is really important, obviously, but it's not the only thing you need to get right. Another reason you could walk away from the deal is that the fundamentals aren't there. It doesn't matter if you've got the deal of a century. If it's in the middle of Nowhereville, then it's going to be difficult to let and sell in the future. You have to make sure there's jobs, there's transport links. You need to look at the local economy. Is unemployment a huge issue there? Or is it quite prosperous? Schools as well. You know, does it have schools in the area? Are they good schools? Universities, an extra tick if you can get that. Airports, the list goes on. I'm sure you could list off many other things that would make up a fundamentals checklist. But they need to be there. And having just one isn't enough. For example, a while back, an investor presented to me a deal they were looking at. And they were basing this deal on one fundamental, which was an airbase. But if that airbase was to shut down or close, then that area would become very unattractive overnight because there was nothing else there. There was no transport links, no other major employers. So they were basing their whole investment model on one fundamental. Now, make sure you don't do the same. You have to tick many of those boxes to feel confident that your property will not only be in demand today, but be in demand in the later years, because property is a long-term play.
This is something that you see a lot when people are just starting out. It's something that's easy to do because you'll start looking in a particular area. You'll find that the prices are a little bit higher than you'd like, or there's very stiff competition, and you just move a little bit further out, a little bit further out, and you'll find something that looks like good value. You'll then get into negotiations, you'll be happy with the price, and it seems like you've got a great deal. But because you've pushed the limits of where you were looking to invest in the first place, you can end up overlooking the fact that those fundamentals just aren't there. You can get fixated with price and overlook the fundamentals, which is a mistake you don't want to make. But this is something you see at all levels. We often have people bring deals to us that are at a great discount, or they seem to have an amazing potential ROI, but they're in areas that just don't have those fundamentals. And as a result, the numbers are kind of fantasy because it's going to be so difficult to either get that property fully let or sell that property on to somebody and get that uplift that you were expecting. So price and fundamentals we've talked about so far, you've got to get both right. And if you can't get both right, then the right thing to do is walk away.
Now, normally, if the fundamentals are right, then rental potential is there. And in the past, that would have been enough. But now you have to actually take that a step further and make sure that you meet the mortgage stress tests. Now, we're not going to run through the stress test calculations again today. We've done that before, and we'll link to that in the show notes. But make sure you understand them. But basically, any property that you purchase today with a buy-to-let mortgage needs to have a certain amount of rental income to be able to get a mortgage on it at 75% loan-to-value. If it does not meet that level, then the loan-to-value you can get on that property will be reduced. And in some cases, in some areas, significantly reduced. It may mean that you need to put a deposit level of 40 or even 50% to make the deal work, which for many property investors will make it unattractive. Now, you may be targeting a particular area right now, but these rental stress tests may mean that you have to consider elsewhere. London, for example, and many parts of the southeast just don't work anymore, as rental levels there don't meet the stress tests to get a 75% loan-to-value mortgage. So, for Rob and I, that would make us walk away right now, and it may be the same for you. So when you're assessing a deal, make sure it meets the rental stress test early on in your research before you spend too much time on a deal, because you don't want to get to the right at the end of the deal and realise it doesn't work.
Another reason to walk away from a deal might be undesirable neighbours. So even if a deal has got everything else going for it that we've talked about so far, you're going to run into trouble if the neighbours have got potential to cause you difficulty. So that could be all number of different things. It could literally be the neighbours and them shouting or causing noise or complaining about things. I've heard from investors who've had trouble with that in the past. The problem, of course, is that the neighbours could change at any time, or they might not be in making a racket when you're around to view. There's not a vast amount you can do about that, but you can, of course, go around and arrange viewings at different times just to make sure. But there are also other local characteristics that could make a property difficult to let or to sell in the future. So sometimes, for example, if there's a bus stop directly outside, that could cause problems because you'll get people sitting on the wall, throwing litter over, queuing up outside the window, all that sort of thing. Then there could be a noise problem. Rob B has talked on the podcast in the past about when he had a deal, it looked perfect, everything was amazing. Then he happened to look on Google Street View and noticed that there was a tyre shop next door. So there were just piles of tyres everywhere. That suggests noise, and it doesn't look particularly great either. Now, normally, that kind of bigger thing you'd notice when you go and look at the property for the first time, but it's easy to ignore. It's easy to get sucked in and ignore it if the price or some other factor seems good enough. But in reality, these are things that you have very little control over that have the potential to cause you problems throughout the entire time that you own the property. So if the neighbours aren't right, it could be time to walk away.
Another reason to walk away is if your house you're looking at is leasehold. Now, apartments will all be leasehold, and that's expected. And don't worry, that's typical. Just make sure it's 125 years in length or more, and you're fine. But with houses, mortgage companies don't like it if they're leasehold. It used to be okay in the past. You know, 5 years ago, this wouldn't have been an issue. But that's why staying on top of the market is so important. Today, it is an issue. So if you find that the property you're looking at is a great deal, but when you dig into your research that that house actually is a leasehold house, then it's a reason to walk away.
Now, in the future, this might not be a problem because there are lots of changes going on in this area at the moment. The government is looking to ban the sale of new leasehold houses, and it's talking about making changes so people who already own them aren't disadvantaged by the leasehold status. So this might go away, but at the moment, this warning very much remains still in place. And on the theme of leasehold, whether it's a leasehold house or a flat, in either case, you need to be looking at the ground rent and looking at the clause around how ground rent increases. Normally, there'll be some mechanism in the lease for ground rent to increase over time, because otherwise inflation means that it'll effectively be going lower and lower and lower. And that's normal. But there are a lot of developments around where there's a clause where the ground rent doubles every 10 years. This is something that lenders really do not like. Some lenders will allow it, but a lot of others won't. And that's a real problem because often you can get a very long way down the line with this. You can have your offer in principle and everything else. You can do a load of work on it before your solicitor flags up this clause and the whole thing falls apart. It can be tempting to push ahead at this stage because, again, you've put so much into it. You've put in time and money. And it can be tempting to try to find another lender who will be okay with it or just buy with cash and worry about it later. But the trouble is, when you come to sell, whoever buys it from you is going to have exactly the same issues, exactly the same concerns. So that is going to put downward pressure on the value of the property. There are plenty of others you can buy that aren't going to have this issue, so it's best to walk away. Also on leases, something not to avoid but be aware of, to be careful about, is leases that have a relatively short amount of time remaining.
For most people, they will want to avoid a property with a short lease. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, it'll be difficult to get a mortgage, if not impossible. So that means you have to buy the property cash. Then you have to go through the trouble and hassle of renewing that lease and paying for the privilege as well. So you may think, oh wow, I've got a great deal. I don't know, it's got a low lease, but this price is fantastic. The reason why the price is fantastic is because of the reasons I've just mentioned. Now, for some people, this is a strategy that they intentionally work with, and they will go after properties with low leases. They know how much they should be paying. They know how much time and cost it will take them to get this rectified and sorted. And then they will go on to flip those properties after they've sorted the lease challenges out. So it is a strategy for some, but a reason to avoid for most.
So lots of reasons there why you're best off walking away from a deal. All very easy to understand, but not easy to remember and actually pay attention to in the moment. And the trouble is that the nature of property is working against you here. The way that property works, you'll normally start negotiating around price before you've had all the information, in England and Wales at least. You'll walk around a property, make an offer on it, and then it's later that information might come to light in the legals that will make it look different. And by that point, you're mentally committed. Also, because deals can take a long time to do. By the time you get towards the end of the process, if something comes up towards the end that tips the balance against, by that point, you've put so much time into it and you've put some money into it as well with legal fees and broker fees and things like that. It's very difficult to actually have the discipline to walk away. But that's why we wanted to record this episode. We wanted to flag these things up. So if this is you right now, if you're in the middle of a deal, you can mentally run through this list and make sure that you're still happy with what you're doing. And for future deals, run through this list at different points in the process. Keep making sure that you're happy. Because in the moment, walking away is a very difficult thing to do. It'll feel like you're losing something, but actually you're winning because it means you're either getting yourself out of an investment that could cause you trouble or at least saving that cash for an investment that's going to be even better.
The good news is, though, we have an article on this very subject to help you work through it. So we'll link to that in the show notes. So it's time for some listener success stories. You can tell us how you're getting on and how the podcast has helped you in all different ways. You can reach out on our social channels, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find all of those at Property Hub UK. You can leave us a 5-star review. You can message us in the forum. It's up to you. However you do it, we just love to hear from you. We've had loads of 5-star reviews in recently. I'm going to pick out a couple that really made us happy because it's just about people taking action. It's great that they're enjoying the show and dropping 5 stars, and please do if you're enjoying it. But it makes it even more satisfying when people couple that with action. So the first one is from Chris, who's just starting to take action. And Chris says, can't stop talking about it. I recommend this podcast to anybody who's talking to me about property. I've listened to all the episodes so far, some more than once. I can't get enough. Can you do more than one podcast per week? I'm currently putting down offers for my first buy-to-let property and hope to meet the Robs at some point in the future. And moving further on from that, in the same week we had a review in from David, who's just completed on his first buy-to-let. I've been an avid follower and fan since a friend took me to a meetup in September 2017. Since then, I've listened to the back catalogue, helped and referred others, and furthered my knowledge through Rob D's other resources too. After assessing a HMO, a split title development, commercial to resi, I finally purchased a single BNV buy-to-let property, which is nearing completion for full refurb for the rental market. I can only thank you by giving you the credit and referring as many people as possible to the podcast. You deserve every success. Well, David, so do you. Fantastic. That's well done on your first investment. The first one is the hardest and you're going to learn the most, but the fact you've done it is brilliant. Congratulations.
Before we wrap up, just time for Hub Extra, that part of the show where we give you that little bit more, whether it's a resource, a tool, a quote, something to be thinking about, something that will help you in your life in property and beyond. And you'll find even more packed into the Hub Extra email that will land in your inbox every Friday morning. Today's Hub Extra resource is something called Count It, which is at countit.com. And this is something we've been using for the last few weeks at Property Hub to get fit and get competitive, I think it's fair to say. It effectively allows you to have a league based around fitness challenges. So what you can do is track your activity using something like a Fitbit or an app like Google Fit or whatever you want to use for your device. And everybody else does the same. And all of that gets pulled into Count It, which puts together a league table for you to track how everyone's doing. And Rob, I think it's fair to say that we've got a fairly competitive team at Property Hub.
We have. I'm surprised we're not actually recording this on the move. That's how competitive we are. But yes, we do have a competitive team and we're probably right up there with the most guilty of that charge, Rob. Definitely seem to be taking a few more walking meetings more recently. And I noticed that you seem to be walking between your meetings as well, rather than taking public transport. But that's the point. It's motivating us and it's getting us into good habits and good actions. So you can use it for yourself. You know, if you just want to track your own progress, then fantastic. But there are loads of apps for that. The reason why we're recommending this one is that you can use it with your friends and your family to together create good habits, but with a bit of competition. And who doesn't love a bit of competition?
So that's us done for this episode. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'd love to know what you thought of this episode and what you'd like us to cover in the future. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram at Property Hub UK. And of course, you can join the conversation in the Property Hub forum at propertyhub.net. We'll be back on Tuesday with Ask Rob and Rob. So we very much look forward to seeing you then. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.